The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Pushing you everywhere and anywhere.
Justin Gaethje, ladies and gentlemen.
And Bilal Muhammad appears to have passed this Damian Maia test. And he is going to get another big showcase later in 2021.
Bilal, remember the name Muhammad.
Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
All right, welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Matt Serra is away today. I think he's with Dana. So, Bob, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having.
I came, I'm really running late today. I got people outside fixing stuff. And I just, there was traffic and I'm late. So we're going to have, did you watch the fights? Did you see the Gaethje Michael Chandler fight?
I was actually at Skankfest and I was scheduled to go on stage late and I begged somebody to go on before me. And so I could take her for, you know, Kim Condon. She let me go on before, and I went and watched it at a bar. I mean, standing room only. They had the Canelo fight over here and the UFC right here. And around, I don't know, maybe 300 people just standing room only.
Hey, it was incredible. We got Justin. Justin is here now, I guess. He's in the waiting room. Hey, Justin.
What's up, guys?
How you doing?
Great.
You look good considering that fight you just had. Like, you look like you don't have a lot of marks on. Even in that photo of you and Chandler in the hospital, you look pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, other than him shaking me a little bit in the first, you know, I did not get hit too much. My leg was jacked up for sure.
Yeah, I think his was too. I mean, you gave his leg quite a beating. Were you surprised you were able to do that the way you were? Because, I mean, everyone kind of figured you were going to go after the legs, and you did.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely an idea that we had before going in. You know, with the stance being so wide, you know, once he really goes forward with all the explosion, it's really straight backwards, at least for a couple steps. So, yeah, I mean, that was, you know, you've seen in previous fights where he's had some serious issues with leg kicks. So, yeah, that was definitely part of the plan.
He didn't look, I mean, he looked way worse than you at the end of the fight. He got, they get 22 stitches in the mouth. I mean, you really.
Yeah. Those numbers they put up for strike counts are absolute bullshit. Absolute bullshit. They don't paint a picture of anything. The announcers use it to, you know, as a tool to kind of keep the fight fans interested or intrigued, but those numbers are absolute bullshit. He didn't hit me much after the first round at all, other than when the ref, you know, got me hit one time. My fault, should protect yourself at all times. It is what it is. I moved past that, but yeah.
What was his power compared to what you were expecting? Because he's definitely, he's good on his feet and he's obviously very strong. We saw what he did to Dan Hooker, who is certainly better than that fight showed. What was his power, what you expected? Was it not quite as much or was it more?
I mean, how fast he was surprising. That's always going to be, you know, when you don't see something like that and then it's right there in front of you. I mean, it was fast. The first round specifically was really fast. The shots that he hit me with, no, not one shot that I felt like, again, the one shot where my legs got kind of funky, you know, I didn't feel like I got hit hard. It was weird. It was just like a split second of, you know, loss of something. And then it was immediately back to normal. So the shot was hard, but it wasn't extra hard. It was perfectly placed.
Right. But you felt like you weren't in any danger. Maybe it looked worse to us than it actually felt to you.
Yeah. I mean, I never felt in danger at all.
Was it weird to have your coach? I mean, your coach had so many fighters on that card and you guys all won. Was it weird to have your coach, you know, not be just you focusing on just you having to go around everywhere?
I fought first, so it really nothing changed when it came to how we approached my fight. The only thing that changed is how, you know, he approached the fights after, because, you know, he had to come back, change his clothes and really worry about the next two athletes. So going first, it kind of, you know, made it normal.
Did you guys swapped with Chito Vera Frankie, right? That was the, you guys just kind of flip-flop. Was there a reason for that?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as this fight got announced, myself, Camaro, and Trevor were told, our manager, Ali Abdelaziz, that, you know, we couldn't go back-to-back-to-back to start working on this. And yeah, I think, I don't know how far before we found out, but we certainly knew when they announced it.
Okay. Yeah. Because that, I mean, it didn't really, as a fan, it didn't matter. You know, you watched that fight. It didn't change anything for you either, I take it, right? There was no change in mentality or any of that stuff.
No. All it did is help my coach. You know, if it was back to back to back, you know, he has to tape all of our hands. And then I go out and fight. He rushes back, goes out with Rose. And so for an hour and 20 minutes or an hour and 30 minutes, he is not with Camaro at all. And so that would have been the case. And that was why we had to change it.
Wow. That's funny. That didn't even occur to me. I thought it had something to do with the UFC. Not, I mean, Frankie and Marlon was a great fight, too. So I was like, well, maybe they just wanted to start with this because people are talking about fight of the year. I mean, you seem to be really comfortable in those like close, just slugging it out. Like you seem to be really, really comfortable in those situations.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but it is the most peaceful that I've ever been by far. Like I am so relaxed and just, God, I have control of everything, you know, flying on an airplane. I can't relax because I have no control if we're going to crash, you know, riding the passenger seat of a vehicle. I don't have control in that cage. I have control. So, I'm just so relaxed.
That's interesting. I get really jittery and it's gotten worse since after the pandemic. I didn't fly for so long, but I've gotten really shitty in turbulence and in bumps. So you're an uncomfortable flyer.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Xanax helps for sure. But just flying, you know, floating through the air with 200 other people and a big metal tube, you know, it's super safe. You know, the statistics are there, but I don't know. Something about my rationalization tells me I'm not safe.
And when you're in those moments, you said you feel like really peaceful. You're able just to block everything else out and you're only seeing and feeling what's happening in front of you. Are you like having like a lot of conscious thoughts or is it all mostly reaction?
Yeah, there's not. I didn't have one conscious thought. I didn't hear the crowd one time. Yeah, just complete serenity and peace. But, you know, in a competition, hurt this motherfucker kind of way. So probably hard to understand.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more scared of what you do than I am of flying. They both frighten me. But the idea of doing what you do, especially the way you do it. I mean, everybody kind of recognizes that you do. You're really ferocious. And I mean, you're obviously a fan favorite. And you never seem to have any qualms about that. Like a lot of guys want to take less damage as they move forward, but you don't seem to be concerned about it.
Yeah. I mean, since I fought Dustin Poirier in the fights, you know, I've probably been in there almost 60 minutes of fight time. And, you know, the one shot from Tony Ferguson, the three shots in the first round from Michael Chandler are the only shots that I see that I have taken since that Dustin Poirier fight. You know, that's not to say that practice isn't harder, but it is what it is.
What do you think about him? Fighting for the belt. What do you think is going to happen in that? And do you have do you think you should be next in line?
I was ranked number two. I was the last one to fight for the belt. You know, the circumstances were not the same as the champ retired. You know, kind of resets everything. So I was number two, and I needed to get a win. I did that. It was a spectacular win. Could have finished, but for the first time in my life, winning was more important than knocking somebody out. I'm not happy about it. I somewhat regret it, but I do think I made the correct calculation.
Have you any conversations about what's next? What's happening next? Anybody?
No, not with the UFC. You know, Dana at the press conference said this guy's ranked number two. If he wins, he's fighting for the belt. You know, this is not boxing. The best thing is, you know, there is a path to the title. I took that path. You know, the guys that I fought, my three losses were to, you know, at one time or another, a current champ, interim champ, and a former champ.
Yeah.
You know, and Eddie Alvarez being a former champ, Dustin Poirier being an interim champ, and Khabib, when I fought him, was the current champ. So I've taken the hardest road that they have out there. And yeah, you know, I fought, I lost. Shit resets when he retires. This is a new ball game. So yeah, I think, I'm not sure who's going to win. I'm really hoping that I'll be in the stands to watch that fight. I'm a huge fan of MMA. It's going to be a really, really interesting fight.
What did you do after your fight? After you won, what did you do? What do you do? Chill? You go out? Do you party?
Yeah, no, we, so they made me go to the hospital and they, you know, wasted 2.5 hours of my life is what they did. And then, yeah, I go back to the hotel, you know, all my family's there. And we just go up to my room and we, you know, hang out and laugh, you know, a lot of laughing.
I mean, you're sponsored by Trojan. I mean,
I got my.
I saw your Twitter. You literally had a duffel bag of Trojans. You had all the sizes except mine. The slim and sassy.
I got my mom there, my sister, family. So dude, that is so much more important to me than going to try to score some pussy at night.
Yeah. And you you said too that you wanted the knockout and you got the decision. You were just fighting for a win. But I mean, again, I would never have noticed that by the way you were fighting. It looked like you were trying to.
So it wasn't just like specifically let's get a win only. It was there's a constant risk assessment that's going on, and the power that he presented and the choices that he was making, you know, didn't allow that factor to go down enough for me to capitalize on it. And yeah, the choice being, you know, his choice to not go away. He had made a choice after the first round or halfway through the second that no matter what, he was going to be ready for the firefight. And, you know, he understood how much danger he was in. So there was never a spot where I could catch him relaxed, which you need to do to knock somebody out.
Have you had that before where you felt like you pressed for a win and it cost you? Where it was something like you were in good shape and then you pressed a little harder because you wanted the knockout, I should say, and where you took damage because of it?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that my first two losses to Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier were very similar in that way. For one, you know, I hadn't understood what I was doing or why I was doing it. You know, now I have a much better understanding of what and why and how. But yeah, back then it was just, let's see who's tougher. You know, I thought from day one that's all this game was let's see who's tougher. But yeah, this last fight really opened my eyes to, you know, how skill-based it is.
And I think Khabib has been kind of lobbying for Makhachev to fight for the title, maybe because obviously they're close. And how do you feel about that? And do you think, obviously Dana said you're number two, you're going to get the shot. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I mean, if you're not using your friends to better yourself, then, you know, as a group, then you guys are fucking up. That's his job. You know, I still do not believe that was him writing those messages. It was way too proper of English. Not ever once in the history of his. And then people want to say it was Ali Abdelaziz. Like, he has much less chance of writing a proper sentence in this form than even Khabib does. So it wasn't either one of them. If I had to guess, I would say it was Rizvan Magomedov, the dude that helps Ali with the Russian dudes.
And when you read something like that, do you kind of go like, hey, this is all just a part of it? Or is there a little party that's like, hey, what the fuck, man? I mean, you know, I deserve the next shot, and it's kind of insulting.
Yeah, I mean, I really shouldn't even reply because it doesn't fucking matter what they think. At the end of the day, that dude Makhachev fought number 14, went to number 5, and fought a late replacement, Dan Hooker. It wasn't Dan Hooker on a full camp. It does not count as much, but it's still, I'll give him, it's two, you know, top 15 guys, none in the top 5, and only one in the top 10. That's not how this shit works. Do your fucking job, fight these guys. Benil Dariush is right here, like, and I like the dude. He's my friend, so that's why, you're not just going to jump over this man and expect to get a title shot whenever number 3 guy is Benil Dariush. You know, handle that.
So you think him against Benil would be the fight?
It makes sense. That's when it comes to shit that makes sense, that'd be it.
If Poirier wins, let's say Poirier takes the title from Oliveira, you've lost to Dustin. This would be the first time I'm guessing that you've had a rematch, unless you did it in the. Is there any type of a mental thing for that, or no? How would you think you'd feel about that? Being that that you lost one to him.
I mean, when I take myself back to that night in Arizona, you know, after that fight, I was outside. I took 200-300 pictures with fans. I was out at the, you know, out the bar hanging out. I'm from Arizona, so all my friends and family were there. So at that point, I went out, you know, to a bar, took a shit ton of pictures. And yeah, that's not where Dustin Poirier is or was. So there's nothing from that night that terrifies me to relive. But I don't think the same would be said for him. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the rematch. I'm looking forward to him knowing, you know, what he went through last time, having to embrace that, having to, you know, really buy into being content with that happening again. And then, you know, with, again, with this last fight, I've understood how much my skills should be a factor. And so, yeah, it's a much different fight all the way around.
And what about the, and Chandler's wrestling people? I think that I thought that would be a bigger factor because obviously your defense is great and you certainly can, you know what you're doing and you're a very good wrestler. So was there less of it than you thought? Like sometimes two guys, like the first Colby Kamaru fight, there was like, I think no takedown attempts or, you know, is that kind of what happened with you guys? Like where you felt like there was not going to be a whole lot of shots taken?
I mean, you don't. I don't go into any fight with too many preconceived notions on things that will or won't happen. You know, I like to really be present and just rely on my, you know, my skills that I've gained. But I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah, but guys have that philosophy too. Like some guys will watch a lot of tape and they're obsessed with tape and they're obsessed with preparation. And other guys just watch very little and say, I don't want to have a preconceived notion because then I'm going to wind up doing something. Anticipating something that's not coming.
If you only have a plan A and plan B and then those fail, like what is your options? You know, you kind of put yourself up against the wall or in a hole from that first second. You know, you have to be perfect for 15 or 25 minutes. And that's really not a lot of time in theory. So you just have to really take control of that. And I just controlled the space. That's why he wasn't able to, you know, I never touched the fence with my back other than that one time that I was slightly rocked in the first period. You know, and outside that, I'd never even crossed the black line. So in order for him to have success there, he would have had to make those things happen.
Was there anything, the example I use a lot because it was Jones said it, was after the last fight with Cormier where he threw that head kick. He said they had noticed something with the way he dipped, I think, to his left, if I remember correctly. There was something that he saw in tape that he just made a mental note of. Was there anything with Chandler that you saw that you just kind of made a note of and said, I'll just kind of keep it there if I need it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the constant in a fight. You know, we've trained these, you know, there's thousands and thousands of pieces of information coming in those instances. And, you know, your ability to process it, but not hesitate. It's something that I've worked on and perfected. And that is, what was your initial question?
I was kind of quoting what Jones had said about Cormier, where he noticed him dipping a certain way. So I was wondering if there was anything you had noticed beforehand that you kind of went, that's something I noticed.
So you go back and watch the fight, you see when I landed that big uppercut, you know, 2 seconds before that, I landed a hook. And so that information that I'm receiving in that instance is why I threw the uppercut, you know. But again, you know, I don't have one thought process in there, so I wouldn't be able to retain the information if that was the case.
Right. So when you understand the game plan, you just kind of know what it is, almost like you feel it as opposed to thinking it through as you're fighting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is a honed skill. I have honed these skills for hand-to-hand combat, you know, my entire life. So yeah, that is just the most important thing. I don't know how to explain it. I'll probably sound stupider the more I talk. So
no, it's interesting. I mean, again, it's such a mindset that as a person who's never fought to hear what you think and you feel in the cage. Some guys may think that their mind is racing all the time. And a guy like you is like, no, I'm just kind of feeling whatever comes at me and I'm trying not to think.
I mean, for me, it's going to a primal instinct spot. You know, as humans, you know, it's natural to eat, sleep, drink, fuck, and fight. Like those are natural. And not too long ago, we had to fuck to eat, sleep, drink, and all that shit comfortably. And I think it is in us. I think you see mama bear instincts. You see people lifting cars off of people that are in desperate situations. I'm able to tap into that and be comfortable there. So I'm not sure how or why, but yeah, that's what I do. And that's why I look so comfortable in there, because I'm in a very peaceful state.
You just celebrated your birthday.
Yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
What did you get? What did you get? What do you ask for? What does a guy like you ask for your birthday?
Oh, fuck, dude. This is a weird life, to tell you the truth. I spend a lot of time alone.
Really?
Yeah, I went golfing. All my family lives in Arizona. You know, I have friends around here, but yesterday was Sunday and I like to rest on Sunday. I went golfing in the morning and then I was at home by myself. I went to King Supers, got me some cinnamon rolls. I went to get a cake, but I didn't see a cake that I wanted to eat. So I got some cinnamon rolls and made those bitches and enjoyed the hell out of them. Then I went to bed.
You didn't open a present? Nobody sang happy birthday?
My mom and dad sang me happy birthday.
All right. Oh, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Gaethje. Happy birthday to you. There you go. We sang it to you.
Thank you.
You sang it to
him. Yeah, I'm in Vegas on Wednesday to quarter a guy this Saturday. And then I'll head home to Arizona for the next week. So I'll be there all week. I'm sure we'll do some kind of celebration. We're going to the Polar Express. I got seven nieces, two nephews.
Oh, wow.
What's the Polar Express?
It's I've never been there because I don't have children. It's a ride. But I think on a train, and it's based, you know, it's the Christmas theme.
Christmas thing, but it's an awesome ride.
I've heard of that. Yeah, I have heard of that. So do you like having like nieces and nephews, right? Cause I have two nephews, and I'm too irresponsible to be a parent. So I just kind of, it was great, like doing little shit with them and then just kind of not having to deal with it.
Yeah. You get to go home and have peace and quiet. Yeah. I love it. I live a state away. So it's tough, man. Every time I see them, they've grown so much. And that shit hurts. But, you know, I call them as much as often. They come up here once or twice a year. So yeah, it is what it is. This is the life I chose.
Yeah.
It's great to have you as an uncle though. Just, you know, you're never going to get fucked with.
Yeah. And I'm from a really small place. So yeah, they're, you know, they get to take some of my celebrity and go to school with it. You know, they're the cool kids at school. One of my nephews is, cause they all know he's my nephew. So yeah, that's all cool.
Well, Justin, look, man, thanks for coming on. I love you. And, again, I hope you fight for the belt after,
you, man.
Thank you. After, you know, you're one of my favorite fighters. And after that last performance, it was what we expected. And I was actually almost equally impressed with Chandler, his ability to withstand it and his ability to finish the fight. I thought,
yeah, I've said it before. Not often does my opponent get to best me in the inspirational department. And I'm so glad that he's getting recognition for that. You know, that it's being brought to the attention of what he made a choice, you know, and it really can, you know, relate to everybody and everybody's life. And, you know, the choices that you make, the choice you're making right now, you know, is all that matters. And he made a choice to not go away, to not give up. And that's the only way that you could take those shots and take that damage. So yeah, it's commendable. Not smart, but commendable. Yeah.
Really great. I was in a bar in Houston and the place was going fucking ballistic during the fight. So
yeah, those are my favorite stories, man. I had a chef this fight, and she had never watched the MMA fight. At some point, I said Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather, and she's like, "I know Floyd Mayweather, but I've never heard of the other guy." I was like, "That's awesome, you know. I love that you have no interest in any of this. You know, just help me with my nutrition." But yeah, I told her when I win, you know, if there was a satellite from space, there's like just one quick ray of energy, and yeah, that's why I fight. That's the main reason I fight, is to make people feel that feeling. And I know that my fights do that to people. When I see a fight like mine, you want to go home and watch that shit. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with these
guys? Yeah.
But, you know, it's so fun.
Yeah. And even in the losses, and again, like we just said about Chandler, there was never anything other than respect. And like, this is a guy I would watch fight once a week if he could fight once a week. Like, it's just every fight you're in is a great fight. And I can't wait to see you fight either Poirier or Oliveira. I mean, whoever you fight, you know, I'll look forward to that, man. And have a great holiday. It's always good talking to you.
Yes, sir. You guys as well. Have a good one.
This episode of UFC Unfiltered is brought to you by P3, the official protein snack of the UFC. P3 portable protein packs are a savory and crunchy combination of three dynamic sources of protein from meat, cheese, and nuts. Each P3 pack contains up to 13 grams of protein, and they come in great tasting combinations like turkey, almond, and Colby Jack. P3, three dynamic ways to fuel your day with protein packed meat, cheese, and nuts, because three is better than one.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You you say I love you?
No, but that what I meant to say was I love you as a fighter, not I love you. Like I don't I know him through interviewing him. I love you as a fighter, but I just got sidetracked.
I'm kidding.
It's no, just, you're right though. It was weird because I don't know him like that, but I was trying to say I love you as a fighter, but to say I love you sounded like we're that close. It's just weird.
Oh, it just came out. I was like, I love you. It was like that I would say it to Dawn.
I didn't mean that.
Yeah. You know, and I'm glad he didn't say it back because I would have had to leave this car. I would have had to hang up.
He did say it back.
Yeah, but did he go out? Not like you, not I love you.
Well, I love you as a fight. I was just saying like his in his fights. Yeah, you're right. Just didn't come out right.
You said I love you too, man. He did it the right way. I love you too, man.
Yeah. He probably thinks that guy's weird. Why would he say that? I just didn't finish my thought. You know, I start thoughts and I don't finish them.
Well, it's funny that you said the Polar Express, because you don't have kids and you're like, what's that? It's you know, it's just a kid ride. It's very funny.
But isn't it better that I didn't know what it is? Like, isn't that shows you that I have any interest in kids stuff. I don't know what the Polar Express is.
Yeah, if you were like, oh, I have season passes, it would have been a concern.
But yeah, his fight, it was fucking amazing. I haven't seen you in a while, Bob. I have not seen you.
Yeah, I've been, I don't know. You're on the road. I'm on the road.
I know.
You gotta come up. You coming for Thanksgiving?
I think I think I'm going to see my family. Maybe I can come up later that night. I got to see my parents though.
Ooh,
I know.
I don't like you.
I know they don't, but I still have to see them.
Max misses you.
I miss Max too, but my parents have a few things in the will I may have my eye on. Oh, so really? I don't want
to. What, a house in Jersey?
Yeah. A few stamps. Fucking.
Oh, come on. You got to come up. Will you come up for dinner?
I'll come up after dinner. I got to see my parents, but I will come up after dinner.
I was so funny. I'm at the Skank Fest, which, it was sad that you weren't there.
I had a makeup date at Caroline's from like a year and a half ago. That was the date they gave me.
Should have canceled.
I know. I wish I could have.
It was amazing, but I'm standing in front of the venue. It's all fans. You know, when you go to a festival, a lot of times it's, you know, some of your fans, but a lot of other people that are there to see other people.
Sure.
But this thing is just all, they know us.
Right.
And, Kate comes up, he goes, where's Doug? So annoying. So annoying. And I went, I got him so bad. I go, he just went inside and did a set. He's like, what? I go, he's on stage right now, dude. He's like, you're lying. I go, buddy, whatever. He just went on stage and I've never seen a grown man run into a venue for a person that doesn't exist. And he came out a half hour later, very disappointed.
That's good. That does make me happy. That not only that he wanted to see it, but that you lied. And then part three is that I wasn't there to give it to him. That makes me happy.
A lot of Doug Bell shirts at the festival, to be honest.
Oh, were they really? Oh, good.
The big Doug Bell head really just stands out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's almost offensive. It's almost vulgar in its aggression. Yeah, I agree. I would hate that too.
It feels like a warning. Yeah. When you see somebody wearing the Doug Bell, just the headshot, it's like a warning. It's like there's something off with this guy. Like, cross the street.
He has good taste in jokes.
He has good taste in jokes.
Hey, did you see Yair Rodriguez, Max Holloway? That fight was really fucking good. Max won unanimous decision, but Jesus Christ, was that a competitive fight?
It was great too at the end when he ran out to the ambulance. Right? Did you see that?
No, I did not. I watched the his interview in the Octagon, but no, I didn't.
Yeah, I just love that fighters are just, I mean, I wish I would have had that manly thing in me. You know, if I just got into a fight.
Ew.
Not that thing.
I wish I had a manly thing in me.
How about me asking Trojan thing, dude? You should go. I was with my fam. No.
I actually thought Justin was married, so.
Yeah, I did too. No, I didn't want, not the male. I just don't have, if I got into a fight, I would be looking for sympathy. You know, I'd just be like, oh, can you hand me that? I just have people do stuff to me. This guy runs out. The other guys in the ambulance, they're just giving each other high fives.
Yeah.
Get out of each other. It's such a, just a honorable people, you know, human being. These fighters are.
Yeah. I mean, that was a great fucking fight. I like Yair Rodriguez. He hasn't fought in like 2 years.
Yeah, it was a great fight. Max is awesome. I love Max.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. I thought he won at least one of those Volkanovski fights. All right, we got Bilal Muhammad ready to go. Awesome. Everybody's on time today. Like exactly on time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, bro?
Doing okay. How's life?
Good. You know, I just got finished working out. Can't complain, except for the freezing cold Chicago weather.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm in New York. It's starting to really suck here, too. You know, it is what it is. How long have you been in Chicago? Your whole life, or are you just there to train?
Yeah, I've been here in Chicago my whole life. Born and raised here. But I just came back from Vegas on Sunday, working over there at the desk. So it's like going from 80 degrees now in Chicago. It just started flurrying right now. So I'm like, oh, my God, here we go.
Chicago sucks in the winter. It's like a different, because you got that lake shit effect coming right off there.
Yeah, my sister lives right downtown. So like anytime I go over there and visit, it's like freezing cold. And then I'm like, man, I got to move. And then people are like, oh, there's nothing like Chicago. I'm like, yeah, I already had enough of Chicago. I had 30 years of Chicago. I'm done with it.
Do you like doing this stuff at the desk? It's obviously a nice to have that as an option, right? Do you love doing that?
Yeah, I really like it a lot. It's one of those things where I felt like my coaches always told me, like, I always knew so much about fighters. Like, I would always watch fights. I would never miss a fight. Like, I'm watching from the prelims on. And if, like, you have so much useless information about random guys that it's gonna start paying off sooner or later. And then, you know, now that I got my opportunity, I like it because it's fun. And it keeps me in the sport. Even when I don't have a fight or something going on, like, I still in the public's eye. I still have fans looking at me, watching me. And then it makes me study other fighters. So, like, when I'm watching fights and studying them, I'll be like, oh, man, look at this work for this guy. Let me try it for myself. Just learn new things by just watching.
Is there a lot of, do you have a lot of preparation for that though? Is it, do you have to do a lot of homework before it? Or are you kind of just getting information and winging it?
Some guys will just wing it. But for me, like, I want to be the best at everything I do. So like I'm sitting there, I'm watching every single fighter on the card, at least two or three of their fights, just to keep it fresh in my head. And cause I want to bring up something new to the table, because like anybody can look up stats and be like, oh, well, this guy's 6'4" and he's long, but I want to know about their style of fighting, the way they move, the way they this, something tricky about them, so I can bring something new to the analyst desk.
You know, it's funny, Bobby, you just asked that question because I was thinking of the exact same thing as you asked it. I had when Dean Thomas was in town for here in New York for UFC, and I texted him like, hey, let's get together. He's like, oh man, I got to do homework. I got the weigh-in show tomorrow or whatever. So I guess the night before, do you just kind of stay in the house and go over everything and watch fights, or you give yourself a few days? How do you do it?
Yeah, for me, I like probably start the week of, and then when I get down there, it's like once I'm in Vegas, I'm not going out or anything like that. I'll get like a session in or a training session in, and then it's like, all right, back to watching videos and stuff. So it stays fresh in my head. And that's another cool thing is when you're working with other fighters and other coaches like Dean Thomas, and then I work with Rashad Evans. So we're in there, we're watching fights together. So I see his point of view of it, and he'll tell me like, oh, this is what I would tell my fighter right now to do this. So you're learning from these OGs of the game.
Yeah, there really is an art to it. It's not an easy sport because there's so many positions. It changes. I mean, baseball, down the middle, base hit, double. I mean, we fucking know what's happening. But fighting, there's so many things, and you're explaining it in a way to a lot of people who are not necessarily fighters or knowledgeable about fighting. So you're explaining positions and things on the floor and advancing positions. It's really, really it seems like a very difficult sport to call accurately.
Yeah, and exactly. And then the game's like ever evolving. So it's not like there's always something new popping up. We just saw this weekend with Yair Rodriguez, where he brings in such unpredictableness to the game, where a guy like Max Holloway has to sit back and watch him a little bit, and he'll shoot a takedown when he never shoots a takedown because this guy's throwing stuff in the wildest spots. And then as I'm watching the fight, I'm looking at him like I don't even know how to explain that to the viewer because my elbow doesn't move in that way that Yair's does. But it makes me step my game up too, because it's like, all right, let me try that at practice. Let me move like that a little bit and see where it works. Because if it's working on a guy like Max Holloway, it'll work on anybody.
Did you feel comfortable? Like, because you have to know where to look in the camera and when to talk to the guys. And when there's a lot more that goes into it than just knowing. You have to know what you're talking about and give your perspective, but you also have to not look like an ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That's the biggest thing for me, where I'm trying to figure out the camera. I'm looking at the light. I'm looking at that. People don't understand. There's like 8 cameras back there. And then sometimes when you're over talking, like you're just like, you get lost in your thought. But I was literally talking to Michael Chandler about that. He's like, man, people don't understand it. Like fighting's easy. That the analyst work is a lot harder because you're sitting there trying to talk. And then you don't know if you should be talking at the person next to you or the camera, or if you have a good point, look at this camera. But a lot of the people that they're all cool. They're all like, yeah, like understanding the camera work is the hardest thing. Like that'll come with a lot of time and a lot of reps.
Have you ever gotten in like an argument or like kind of like a fuck you moment, like you're wrong or with somebody, or is it always just nice or pleasant? You know?
No, I mean, it all depends on the personalities that I'm working with. Like when I'm working with DC, it's fun because you know that he just takes everything so nonchalantly and he's like joking around the whole time. But when you're going with a guy like Anthony Smith, he's very good at his analyst work. So you're like, all right, I gotta keep up with him because he's very good at breaking stuff down. But when we get to DC, it's all jokes. D Thomas, it's all jokes. But like they also have a serious side to them. So it's fun working with different guys.
Dominic Cruz seems like he's very much about business too. When he announces, Dominic Cruz seems very, very business oriented.
Yeah, when those guys are back there, yeah, you like DC will say it's crack a joke, and Dominic, no, that's not right. and I'll be like, dude, man, loosen up a little bit.
They used to have the fighters on, and sometimes the fighters were supposed to fight the analysts were fighters. We're going to fight that, and that tension was always interesting to me when that happened. You know?
Yeah, Anthony Smith was literally just talking about that with him and John Jones. He said like he was at a desk once and he was like interviewing John Jones. And then I guess they were pushing him to call out John Jones for the fight. And John's like, oh, that's what you're gonna use your life for. And he's like, bro, I'm trying to keep it professional. Like they're telling me to call you out. Like, how are you not? Like we're fighters at heart anyway. And like we saw with Kamaru Usman and Kobe Covington, where they just hate each other. So like those are like good moments too. Cause he may be an analyst at this moment, he may be wearing a suit, but that suit could come off, that tie could come off, and we'll throw some hands.
Have you had that type of because that's a great example of Colby and Kamara really don't like each other, and they've had a couple of fights. I thought Kamara was won both fights decidedly. Have you had that with anybody where you fought him and had a chance to beat somebody who you genuinely didn't like?
No, not yet. For me, I've never really. I want that type of fight. That's what I was trying to call out for, like a Sean Strickland or somebody like that, or like a Kobe Covington, somebody that I genuinely dislike. And I think that would change, level up my game a little bit. But it's like, I'm fighting Damian Maia, and I'm like, hey, you can't hate a Damian Maia.
Right.
And then people are like, talk trash to him. I'm like, bro, he's a legend of the game. Like, he's not going to talk back. And it's just like, I'm not going to fake it. Like, for me, it's like, I hate when guys try to fake a rivalry or something like that, because fans will read it, fans see it, and they know what's real and what's not real. And to me, I'm like, I don't need to do it like that.
Yeah, and no one dislikes Stephen Thompson. Like, you can't. He's the nicest guy in the business. Like, no one has – I've never heard anyone say anything bad about him. So he's a guy that you can't go with. You just got to beat him because he's the guy you're fighting. But everybody likes him.
Yeah, exactly. Even my family is like, oh, why are you fighting him for? And I'm like, oh, my God. And they all have, like, pictures with him because, like, whenever you go to a fight event, he's, like, super cool. Like, we've always – when we've always saw each other with respect and stuff like that. And he's always come up and things like that. So it's cool. But like you said, it's about leveling up and it's about climbing that ladder. And he's a guy that's fought for the title twice. Yeah. He's been top 5 for his whole career. And he's that next level guy where, you know, if you could beat him, that's the best striker in the division. I think he's the hardest guy to fight in the division as well. I mean, everybody's talking about the new boogeyman, Khamzat Chimaev. And saying, oh, everybody's afraid to fight him. I don't think so. Like, he's an easy guy to fight, train for, because he has good wrestling and his striking, there's nothing out of the ordinary about it. Like, you have a million guys in a room that look exactly like him and fight like him. For Stephen Thompson, there's a specific style you have to train for. He's a specialist in striking, a specialist in movement, a specialist in karate. So it's a different type of training and it's a different type of thought process when you're training for a guy like that.
And even if you train for a guy like that, the fact is he just doesn't get tired. Like he'll do that for 25 minutes, that side to side bouncing movement. And I've seen guys really, everyone kind of knows this is how he moves, but it's impossible almost to replicate the way you would need it to for it to translate into a 25 minute fight.
Exactly. And that's the thing where it's like a lot of guys lose to him because they're busy watching him. They're looking at him. They're seeing what he's doing. And then all of a sudden the round's over after he hits you 25 times. And you're like, all right, well, next round I'm going to pick it up again. And then all of a sudden he's standing in front of you doing that movement again. And you're watching and watching and watching. And then you don't start realizing that you need to start putting your foot on the gas until it's the third round. We saw his last fight, the only guy that ever went in there with a mindset of shooting on him was Gilbert Burns. Other than that, everybody else was in there playing his game of striking and going the touch for touch with him. And you can't do that with a guy like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Yeah, he seems like he's kind of hard to cut the cage off on too. Like, you know, a guy's moving like that, you may want to cut the cage, but he just seems like, you know, if you try to cut the cage, he'll just go the other way.
Yeah, he's, like I said, he's a specialist in movement. And there's not a lot of guys like that. You could say he's specialist in karate, but like his movement's next level too. And the way that he moves laterally, there's not a lot of guys that know how to move like that. And he does it effortlessly. Like you said, he don't get tired.
Yeah. And what do you think of the top of the division? What do you think of, obviously, I'm sure you watched Kamaru and Colby. And Kamaru, I think he's a little frustrated. He feels like he doesn't get the respect he deserves. And he really should be considered one of the best, if not the best, pound for pound fighters right now. And what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you can't respect a guy like Kamaru. He's getting better every single fight, and he's a champion that's active. A lot of these guys will sit out right for 4 years. This guy's fighting the guys, every guy they put in front of him. I know people are saying, well, Masvidal didn't deserve that. Well, Masvidal stepped up in 6 days, and he took that fight on 6 days' notice. So I think he did deserve that fight, and the rematch made sense at the time. So, and the fact that a guy that's never been knocked out before like that, Usman knocked him out. A guy like Gilbert Burns, who hasn't been, his last 10 fights, he hasn't looked as good as that. And then all of a sudden he gets knocked out again, even though Kamaru got rocked in that fight, but he showed the heart of a champion, leveled up, got smart again. And then the second fight with Colby, I feel like he rocked Colby early. And I think he thought he was going to finish him because of his other two fights like that. So I think he got a little bit tired in the fourth and fifth round, but still, heart of a champion shows that he beat him way easier than he did the first fight, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And Leon Edwards, you know, you had that fight with him, the eye poke. It was obviously an accident, but I'm sure very frustrating for you. Are you irritated that you're not getting a second go at Leon?
Yeah, very irritated. Like I said, it was like when I was talking about the Masvidal fight, he took that fight on 6 days' notice. So I think he earned that rematch with Usman. But for me, I took that fight on 2 weeks' notice after a fight. And then he's the one who committed the foul. It was on his end. I got eye poked, and you know, I understand him. All right, taking an Nate Diaz fight, blah, 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 whatever. That's a big money fight. But even this fight right here, I was asking for this one when Masvidal pulled out, still December 4th, I would have took this fight too. And I just feel like it made sense for me to get that fight. I know he's trying to say that he wants to wait and see, wait for the title fight, but Usman said he's going to take some time to sit with his daughter, and a lot of stuff happens in between those months, and it's all about momentum in this game. It's like, if I beat Stephen Wonderboy Thompson top five, that's a way bigger win than Leon's win against Nate Diaz. So, and then you, like I said, you still got other guys coming up. Chimaev, they're waiting for anything for it to happen with him. If he gets one more win, they're going to try to push him to that title fight easily next, especially if they're going to give him a guy like Gilbert Burns, which I think is a great matchup.
Yeah.
But if he ends up winning that fight, there's no way that they're not going to let him skip the line in front of Leon.
Yeah, it seems that way. And then we just had Gaethje on. He was saying that there's a clear path with UFC as opposed to boxing to the title. But at times there is a weird workaround. Like if a guy has a couple of really impressive wins, a lot of times they'll jump one or two spots, which we've seen before.
Yeah, like you said, the game's all about hype. It's all about who's going to sell at that moment. And I feel like they're trying to build Leon up a little bit, trying to give him Nate Diaz to steal some of his fans. They were trying to give him Masvidal to get some of his fans because he's not as active on social media. He's not as active like in the public eye. He doesn't like to talk. He wins in the cage 9 fights in a row, but it's like in this game, you have to be an entertainer outside of it too. You need to want the public to be screaming for you to get a title fight. The fighters could be saying, oh, I think he deserves it, yada, yada, yada. But it's like, if they're not going to sell pay-per-views, it doesn't make no sense for the UFC. If this guy, who's the next biggest star, Chimaev has that kind of like the McGregor attitude about it, where it's like people are trying to see what's next with this guy. Who's this next hype? And, you know, the way he wins his fights, he only got hit one time in 4 fights. It's like people are thinking that this guy is the next coming to John Jones type thing. So it's like if he wins, that's going to be the biggest draw to fight Usman.
Speaking of McGregor, he had some stuff to say about your about you after the fight, right?
That guy, he's literally out here just, I don't know what, he's just bored, but he looks for any type of attention when a fight goes on. His fans were coming at me, I think, because I said in the analyst work, I said that Holloway was the first guy to beat Aldo in 10 fights. And then, you know, I think that triggered him a little bit because he was the one that beat Aldo with a knockout. But the guy hasn't won a fight in like 10 years. So like you forget these things. I forgot that McGregor wins fights, actually. he's been out for so long.
Yeah, it's got to be hard too. Like when you I think he sold his company for like $600 million. I mean, I'm shocked that he still fights. Just to put yourself through that with that kind of money. I mean, he definitely likes fighting. And I think he takes losses very personally. But with that kind of money, I can't see any motivation to keep doing it. He just seems to love fighting.
I would quit comedy for $250,000. I'm sure I'm out. I'll do my podcast and I'm done.
I think for McGregor, it's kind of like the attention. You know, it's when you're in the public eye, when you have all that hype, when people put you on this pedestal, it's like once you start losing and then you start, wait, how come they're not talking about me? And that's why I feel like he's always doing random things whenever these guys are fighting. When Max Holloway is fighting, posting a video of him looking him down. It's stupid. It's not even creative anymore for him. It's like, he used to be witty. He used to be good. But now it's just like, it's not really nothing special about it because you lost two times in a row. You got finished two times in a row. And you don't have that, I'm a double champ anymore. You're like, you don't have that anymore. Like if you were to fight Max Holloway would piece him up right now. I think he needs to come back, win a fight, prove himself again, because his last win was against Donald Cerrone, and it was like Donald Cerrone is not the same guy that he was.
Yeah.
So it's not the same Mystic Mac. Now it's just like a pathetic Mac.
Yeah, he's that was a weird win too over the shoulder. I mean, again, it was a creative win. So I started. Who was just doing? I just started. You somebody this weekend?
Rose was doing it. She was.
Oh,
yeah. She was. I mean. It looks so painful.
No, yeah, that's one of those things where it's been happening for forever, but it's like, because McGregor did it, it was like he gets all the attention for it. But that's one of those shots where it's a sport where you try to be creative with any type of your limbs to hit him with. So the shoulder strikes have been happening a lot, and they hurt.
It hurts, right? Does that hurt as much as a punch?
No, because it's like... It just surprises you because you're there. And then it's like the thing that you don't expect, that's what hurts you the most. So it's like when you just get hit with a shoulder, you're like, what the heck? Where the heck did that come from right now? So to catch you in weird spots, like McGregor's, I think it caught Cerrone in the nose. So when you get hit directly in the nose, that rocks you a little bit.
And weren't they in the center of the octagon too? If I'm remembering correctly, that seems like it'd be something more effective up against the cage. But that was, I think, maybe in the center of the octagon, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah, it was center of octagon because Cerrone was sitting there trying to hold on to his wrist a little bit, and he wasn't doing much from there. I think Cerrone, McGregor came out super hard, caught him with a left punch, and then Cerrone, I felt, was like a little bit rocked, so he was trying to hold on a little bit, and then McGregor just started popping him with that.
All right, well, look, good luck against Wonder Boy. That's a great fight, and Lewis Daukaus is a really, really interesting main event, too. And we'll talk to you after, Bilal. It's always great having you on, and have a great holiday. I'm sure we'll talk to you early next year and have a great fight.
For sure. Appreciate you guys, man. Thank you again. Yeah, that's a big main event.
All right, Bobby. I thank you for coming on today. This was a lot of fun. I can't believe it's almost an hour already.
Yeah, that was great. It's good to see you, man.
You too, buddy. I'm running out because I'm going to tape. They're doing a documentary on Dice. And he actually mentioned you. Andrew mentioned you. Is it maybe Bobby? They got a couple of us just talking about Dice. But he mentioned he loves you.
He called me around a month ago at 1 a.m.
Yeah, he does that sometimes.
Eleanor. And you can't, I mean, it was over an hour, maybe two.
Yeah.
And you're just listening, laughing. He is one of the funniest human beings.
Yeah.
Just a human being funny.
Bobby, it's Dice. And then it's just nonsense. He made me laugh so hard. He did that, went to see Billy Joel, and in the back, and he's talking to Billy Joel, and Vinny goes, and that song you do, The Way We Was, and that just, it made me, Billy Joel's trying to get ready for a show, and this fucking idiot.
You remember when we were backstage with Billy Joe? Talk about morons.
That was uncomfortable. Yeah.
You went, yeah, I'm not really into this music. I'm an Aussie guy, but this, I like it. It's not bad.
Yeah. I didn't know what to say. I was nervous, panicking. That's 18 years ago we did that.
Ah, dude, I can't believe how time. You know what?
It's 18 fun. Years.
It's nuts, man. It's crazy.
I'll see you soon, bud. I miss you a lot, man. And are you in town this weekend or no?
No, man. Comedy on Carlson up in Rochester this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Good gig.
This weekend at the Bananas in your old neighborhood over there in Hasbrook.
Hackensack. Hasbrook Heights. Sorry, okay.
Not much. But hopefully I'll see you on Thanksgiving. And I love you. I love you.
I love you too, man. And thanks, Justin Gaethje, the great Justin Gaethje, and Bilal Muhammad. And see you soon. Bobby, take care, buddy.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.